KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Nopa.
I'm from Pittsburgh.
I live in Ingleside.
I live in Sausalito.
I live in the East Bay, Hercules, California, USA, planet Earth.
Coming up, we're continuing our series on KALW's home neighborhood, the Portola. We'll ask how resurrecting a former movie palace could transform the neighborhood.
When you look at an asset like that, a cultural neighborhood asset, you know that an investment in a space like that means something.
Then we'll hear from gardeners in one curious corner of the Portola.
We have to maintain the integrity of the land. We're just stewards. It's taken many iterations through the years.
And we'll meet high schoolers as they let loose in McLaren Park.
I love it. It's much better than, you know, being in a stuffy classroom.
Three stories, one hood, today on Cross Currents. San Bruno Avenue is basically Main Street for the Portola District, a little-known neighborhood in San Francisco's Southeast Corridor. The Portola happens to be where KALW studios are located, and today we're continuing our series of audio portraits of the neighborhood. The tallest building on San Bruno Avenue stands out like a sore thumb. Seriously, it's the old Avenue Theater. It's big, run down, and abandoned. But as KALW's Nicole Grigg reports, a possible investment in the theater has people reimagining what a one-time grand movie palace can mean for a neighborhood.
Imagine walking into the Avenue Theater and settling in to watch stars like Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire in an intricate dance. Humphrey Bogart searching for the Maltese Falcon.
The stuff that dreams are made of.
Or Judy Garland and her dog, transported from black and white Kansas to Technicolor Oz.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high.
That allure is what made grand movie houses like the Avenue Theater so popular. Catherine Petrin is an architect, historian, and an advocate for theater restoration here in the Bay Area.
In those days, there were ushers that would take you to your seat. They were dressed in uniforms. There was games and shows.
You could rely on a day of entertainment, including the latest newsreels, cartoons, and comedy. The entry fee? About 25 cents.
The idea was to really kind of suspend your imagination, walk into these, you know, plaster palaces, as they're sometimes called, and you were meant to be transported to another place in time.
I was probably going there in the early 50s, and it was a hub of the neighborhood.
That's Paul Giannini, retired owner of a neighborhood auto repair shop. He's lived in the Portola for more than 65 years.
People went and saw all the movies that came out.
But those magical movie days have been over for years now. The Avenue Theater closed in the mid-1980s. Now a black gate blocks the entrance. Trash and old leaflets are gathered at the front doors. The marquee is falling apart, and the pigeons have really had their way with this building. But plans are underway to revitalize the space and make it an anchor in the community once again. But that's going to take a bunch of money.
When you look at an asset like that, a cultural neighborhood asset, you know that an investment in a space like that means something.
Joaquin Torres works with the city of San Francisco on a program called the Invest in Neighborhoods Initiative. They're hoping to make some improvements.
One of them is repainting it. One of them is removing and adding a neon sign for the space so that it can be improved and lit up so you can see it from the horizon, right? This is a space that you should kind of have on your mind as being a place you could go to and you can support those businesses that are there. People can point at that and smile, and I know that people want to see that.
About 6 months ago, Catherine Petrin, the theater restoration advocate, she was invited to tour the inside of the Avenue Theater.
And I was absolutely just amazed. It felt like walking into a theater in the 1920s all over again. The layout of the balcony, the auditorium, it's really elegant and beautiful. It accommodates about 800 people. It's very clean and just had a lot of the original features from the 1920s still there. That was a big surprise, and it was just really a source of joy and delight to see what an original condition the Avenue remains in.
No matter how beautiful it is inside, the Avenue Theater won't necessarily become a theater again. Many of San Francisco's great movie houses have been transformed. The Alhambra Theater on Polk Street? It's been replaced by a crunch gym, but the historic interior remains intact. Then there's the Red Vic on Haight. Now it's an event space called the Second Act, which hosts several pop-up restaurants. Times, neighborhoods, and needs change. Back in the Portola, corner store worker Ray Gaddis wants the Avenue Theater to return to its original purpose.
Bring it back to a theater of some sort, with live shows, movies, comedy shows, anything to just bring people down to San Bruno Avenue.
Retired car repairman Paul Giannini thinks they could split the difference.
I think they could do movies. It could be a jazz club. It could host events of any kind.
Luke Spray represents the Portola Neighborhood Association. He's heard a variety of viewpoints from residents and merchants.
Maybe a restaurant component, and maybe do a little bit of theater, and maybe have a community arts space, and maybe have lectures in there, as well as showing movies on certain nights.
Some movie palaces like the Avenue Theater are still around in San Francisco. The Castro, the Balboa, the recently revived New Mission Theater, which is now called the Alamo Drafthouse.
They're unlikely survivors.
Again, theater historian Catherine Petrin.
They're whimsical. They're, you know, the neon at night makes them just sort of glowing gems on the street. They really attract people. They ignite people's attention. And I think we're really lucky to have the quantity that we have in San Francisco. And I would just urge people to keep going to your local neighborhood movie theaters and help keep the doors open, because it sometimes can be a struggle for operators.
In San Francisco's heyday, there were about 100 of these grand movie houses. Most have been torn down now to make way for new businesses, but more than 20 remain. Some may be vacant or blighted, but like the Avenue Theater, there's a possibility of a renewed purpose for these buildings instead of just tearing them down. In San Francisco, I'm Nicole Grigg for CrossCurrents.
Nicole is a reporter in training with KLW's Audio Academy.
Everybody look around, because there's a reason to rejoice, you see.
This is CrossCurrents. I'm Hannah Baba. We've been presenting a series about the neighborhood where KLW studios are located, the Portola. The Portola is a region of the city that even some longtime residents might not know much about. Today, KLW's Kavalrup Kaur Singh will take us to a patch of land that's just as mysterious as the neighborhood itself. Our story starts online.
Most reviews on Yelp are of restaurants, but this one's a little bit different.
Parched. Google Maps suggested there would be water, which in fact is true. It's just a few feet down.
Back in 2014, entrepreneur Jason Bennett posted this review of University Mound Reservoir in the Portola neighborhood of San Francisco. Bennett was on a mission to explore the city's hidden pockets and corners. He hopped on a bus, grabbed a sandwich, and walked up to the reservoir, imagining a sunny afternoon relaxing by some shimmery water.
Like, if you look at the Google map, it's a body of water. And you would, knowing no different, you would think that there were two side-by-side man-made lakes that you could just chill out next to.
What he found instead was a large, flat slab of cement.
So a heads up to my fellow Yelpers who think spending the afternoon relaxing by water is a good idea. It is, just not here.
You know, when you get to your final destination, you were like, oh, I hope this is kind of worth it. And then I just, it was just a paved over cistern.
A paved over cistern. No body of water to speak of or chill out by. That's not just disappointing. It also doesn't make sense. A reservoir has to have water. So where is it? To find out, I spoke with Paul Ito, Buildings and Grounds Superintendent at the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, the SFPUC. They're in charge of the reservoir.
So where's the water?
The water? I could show you that. How about if I show you that?
Can you hear that trickling sound? That's water getting treated and monitored a few feet under the cement lid that covers the reservoir. You can hear the water here, but you can't see it. There's more to this reservoir, though, than water that doesn't meet the eye. There's the grounds, the gardens, the gardeners, and the gorilla gardeners.
Do you know what those bushes are over there? Were those hollyhocks or something? What were those?
Paul Ito chats with his crew of city gardeners who maintain the street-side gardens around the reservoir. They whack weeds, blow leaves, trim trees, pick up garbage, and plant. A lot. Not just at the University Mound, but at all 10 reservoirs in San Francisco. And sometimes, so-called gorilla gardeners surprise them with help.
They come in the middle of the night and garden. Our little patches of land.
Some yeah, the older white lady plants it, the whole row of Elysium.
Yeah, with the white flowers.
Here, she just pruned it back. Yeah. This time of year, you prune it back and it comes back. This is it here with the white flowers.
That's Jeff Geddes, one of the reservoir gardeners in Paul Ito's crew. The gardeners might be okay with the older lady and her white flowers, but they don't just let anyone plant on the land. They take their job seriously, growing California natives in order to save water and preserve the natural landscape.
We have to maintain the integrity of the land. We're just stewards. It's taken many iterations through the years.
Ito and his crew are standing below a towering cypress tree on a street corner near the reservoir. Like them, it too has watched over the land for generations.
It's a beautiful tree.
Yeah, it's a beautiful tree.
It's huge. It's established. It's been here a long time. It's a focal point.
In 2006, when the SFPUC was planning a retrofit of the reservoir, there was a possibility that it could be cut down. So they held a community open house to hear what the neighbors had to say about it. Many wanted it to stay.
You look over here and anywhere from this neighborhood and you see that tree.
Suzanne Gauthier is a spokesperson for the SFPUC. When the retrofit was happening, bulldozers were being rolled over the land. So steel plates were fitted around the roots of the tree, allowing them to breathe and keep the tree alive.
It's people who have grown up with it. Their grandkids have grown up with it. They're going to keep growing up with it.
I bet you always wonder what was in here, huh?
Down the street from the old cypress tree is the gardening crew's headquarters. The gardeners are dispatched from here to all the reservoirs in San Francisco. But this isn't just any old tool shed. It looks a little like, well, I'll just let them tell you about it.
1920s, it looks to me.
It's quaint.
Cozy.
Home away from home.
Historic. Out of place.
And definitely very cute. It's a Victorian-style yellow cottage with a white picket fence. Built in the 1880s by the Spring Valley Water Company, the cottage was originally a private residence for employees responsible for taking care of the reservoir. Back then, water was considered private property. Today, water has been declared a human right by the UN, and the cottage is now a public space where neighbors can speak up at community meetings about saving trees and where gardeners can store the tools they need to tend to the land.
Seeds in this one, and we're working gardener's garage.
It's a strange place where the gardeners work, this quaint, cozy, historic cottage from a past century, next to a reservoir that looks like a chunk of cement dropped on earth. Or, in Yelp reviewer Jason Bennett's words,
"It was just a paved over cistern."
In his review, he gave the reservoir 4 out of 5 stars. Even though he never found the water he was looking for, he says he found something even better.
It's stories like this that remind me how cool San Francisco can be, because there's these just little charming stories everywhere that stand in contrast to gentrification, eviction, monoculture, all that type of stuff, and why I wouldn't trade it for anything else.
At the University Mountain Reservoir, I'm Kamalroop Kaur Singh for Cross Currents.
Kamalroop is a reporter training with KALW's Audio Academy. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. If you live in the Bay Area, you know about Golden Gate Park, and it's likely you've been there, but you may never have been to San Francisco's second largest park, McLaren. It borders the Portola District a few blocks from KALW, and you may not know that students from nearby high schools help restore McLaren Park as part of their studies. It's an element of an environmental education program taking root in San Francisco schools. KALW's Claire Strempel joined students in the park to see how it works.
We are cutting ivy off of this tree.
What kind of clippers are those? Those things are huge.
I have no idea. What kind of clippers are these?
Those are just like normal whoppers.
Normal whoppers.
That's Hugo Malta, a senior at Balboa High. He has 2-foot garden clippers in his hands. We're shoulder deep in a prickly thicket of coyote bush. Hugo's friends, Victor Cortez and Jose Enriquez, are helping him reach some top branches.
We're killing this poison ivy because it's an...
Cape ivy.
Cape ivy?
English.
English ivy, because it's an invasive species to McLaren. Now we're doing this so we can have more space for native species.
Hugo, Victor, and Jose are WALC students. WALC stands for the Wilderness Arts and Literacy Collaborative. Learning out here in the brambles is really different from where students spend most of their school days. Balboa High is just down the hill from McLaren Park. In a neighborhood of single-family homes, it's a 3-story, salmon-colored, Spanish-style building. Stately, institutional, and hard to get into. Physically, it's surrounded by a big iron fence, and I had to walk around the block to find the opening. There's a guard sitting by the front door. The building is imposing, and not just for visitors. Just ask senior Paula Hueso.
It feels like we're in prison because, like, all the gates, they keep us locked in. We can't even go outside to eat lunch because they don't trust us, and it makes us feel like we're still little kids, but we're not.
That prison feel probably isn't what administration has in mind. Still, Hugo Malta and his peers say too many lessons they learn in class don't apply to the real world. That makes school feel less inspiring.
After 4 years of waking up thinking this sucks, I guess I'm just going to go into the world, waking up and being like, this sucks.
That's where WALC comes in. A little background. In the mid-1990s, Balboa had low test scores. The district took some pretty extreme measures to fix them. Fired the entire faculty, started a free breakfast service, and created small learning communities, like WALC. Instead of potentially getting lost in the crowd of a big school, WALC kids grow with the same cohort and teachers for a couple of years. For Victor Cortez, it makes a difference.
You kind of feel more connected to the people there, and you kind of push yourself to do a little better, you know.
Once a month, WALC seniors get on a city bus and go to McLaren Park instead of their morning classes. They get academic credit for hours spent restoring the habitat, and it also counts as community service. It's a big shift from the spiked iron gates of campus to the windswept expanse of a verdant hillside, even though it's only 1.5 miles away.
I'm trying to find a bar, but I can't.
Senior Andy Wong offers me a nutrition bar from the snack bag as we hike up over Sedalcia Hill. We're looking down at striking views of the city and the bay, and waiting for a rec and park gardener to come meet us.
I don't know. I just think as kids, we should be able to do this. Because we're still like trying to like explore and like we don't want to just sit in a room all day.
Andy and his classmates help gardeners with restoration projects, like removing invasive blackberry bushes and planting native ferns. Today they're removing invasive plants, prickly ox tongue, wild radish, and an insidious ivy that chokes the life out of native willow trees and coyote bushes. Leisha DeMaio is a rec and park gardener. She's the brains behind many restoration projects.
People aren't telling them everything. They're kind of finding butterflies or birds or hawks or worms, whatever, and you know, just it's just more spontaneous and natural.
One of the major lessons we've got taught was sense of place.
Again, Hugo Malta.
Where you have to have like a love for your own home and your environment. So this is why they probably take us out to McLaren. Yeah, exactly. It's our city. You know, we live here.
The students say this experience actually makes them think a lot more about what's important in the city.
The gentrification problem, police brutality and stuff, it kind of makes you wake up and makes you realize that, you know, these are things in your city that, you know, you have to be aware of.
And walk educates you on all that.
Exactly. Which is really cool.
What's going on around you.
It's like the first time I've taken the material in my classroom and have put it out in the real world. And I've, like, taken what I've learned and used it in the real world.
It isn't all scenic work in the hills of San Francisco. On Wednesdays, when they aren't in McLaren Park, the students work to improve their campus. At Balboa, they run the recycling and composting program. I ask Emerson Geisbrecht which he prefers.
Probably this one, because that we have to deal with a lot of moldy, old, gross food. The compost specifically. Recycle is just, you know, a bunch of used paper, but compost can be pretty gross.
This is also where traditional academics come in. Most students don't write really long papers until college. But Walk seniors do. They write 15-page papers about environmental concepts. Emerson says the program keeps it manageable.
Yeah, it's a 15-page paper, but we have 3 months to write it. So we really get to develop it and do it to the best of our ability.
Which is really cool, because then when you're done and then you read it all back to yourself, it's like, whoa, I wrote that? It's like, it's pretty cool.
Walk gives students, like Hugo Malta, a different outlook on what education can be. Remember when he said he wakes up every morning thinking, this sucks? I asked him if that was also true on McLaren days.
No, actually, like when it's a McLaren day, I'm waking up, all right, this is McLaren day, let's go.
In San Francisco, I'm Claire Strempel for Cross Currents.
Claire is a reporter training with KALW's Audio Academy, our 9-month audio journalism fellowship program. And we're currently accepting applications for the next class starting in September. Find out more at KALW.org. And that's all for Cross Currents. Today's team includes Olivia Henry, Leela Day, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Nina Gensler-Debs, Jeremy Jew, Ted Muldoon, Lisa Morehouse, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Carrie Spivak, and Andrew Stelzer. The show was engineered by James Rowlands. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Jen Chien is our managing editor. Julie Kane is our managing producer. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This voice belongs to San Francisco native Sarah LaMesh. She's part of this year's Bard Music West Festival at the Noe Valley Ministry on Sanchez Street. The festival is this Friday and Saturday. All the information is at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Hena Baba.
So that we would have good lives, for the future.